The Greatest Day, the story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group, proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams.
Episode 20 of The Greatest Day, the story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland Senior Football Championship victories, recounts 1962. Cork and Dublin were both swept aside on the way to glory. Throughout the programme, we'll reproduce extracts from the Kerryman newspaper. Gary O'Sullivan's will be the voice you'll hear each time.
Part 1.
Down had put paid to Kerry's All-Ireland hopes the two previous seasons, 1960 in the final and 1961 in the semi-final. However, it wasn't just 60 and 61 Kerry were looking to atone for. In 62, Kerry had played and beaten Offaly, but 24 hours later got a severe wake-up call when they lost to Roscommon in the annual Whitsun match played in Killarney. Roscommon pulverised Kerry, leading 2-6 to 2 points at half-time, then by 2-13 to 5 points at the final whistle. The performance and results sowed serious seeds of doubt in Kerry minds for the campaign ahead. The road to redemption began with a Munster semi-final against Waterford. Kerry could call on 10 of the 59 championship winning side, Johnny Cullerty, Niall Sheehy, Tim Lyons, Mick O'Dwyer, Mick O'Connell, Seamus Murphy, Dave Ganey, Paddy Sheehy, Dan McAuliffe and Tom Long. Kerry had 5 championship newcomers when they met Waterford. Alan Conway of John Mitchell's was at cornerback. His clubmate, Sean Sheehy, came in at half-back, and another Mitchell's man, Seamus Roach, at half-forward. Mid-Kerry's Noel and Jimmy Lucy lined out at centre-back and midfield, respectively. There were major surprises when the selectors named their team to take on Waterford.
The Big Five certainly dropped a bombshell when they made the audacious move of placing Tom Long at full forward. In the past, they had wrestled with the idea of converting the Ventry-born teacher into a centre-back, and apparently have now despaired of the idea. Into the vital centre-half forward berth steps Seamus Murphy, and many are the arguments which can be heard in support of the contention that Murphy is best suited to midfield or alternatively to a wing forward position. Personally, I prefer the camp man on the halfway line, where he has shown a perfect understanding with O'Connell in the past.
A 12-point victory over Waterford was Kerry's, but the scoreline hides the real story. Kerry were made to fight all the way, only grinding their opponents down in the last third of the encounter. Waterford put it up to Kerry from the off.
Waterford with the breeze were quickly into their stride, and when Niall Sheehy fouled Doc Walsh, Jimmy Hewitt tapped over the bar. Dan McAuliffe equalised, and Tom Long goaled when he punched home a cross by Sean Sheehy. Walsh was fouled when just getting away into a good scoring position, to the right of the post. Hewitt pointed the free. Then came a first-class point by Seamus Murphy. Jimmy Lucy fielded at midfield, punched to O'Connell when tackled. He parted to Murphy, and the West Kerry man dropped-kicked beautifully between the posts. Geaney and McAuliffe further improved Kerry's position with points. After a fierce onslaught on the Kerry goals, Tommy Kerwin booted to the net. Justin Spratt put the Desham in on level terms with 2 well-taken points. Waterford hit the front in the 24th minute when Doc Walsh pointed, but their joy was short-lived. Left half-forward Roach certainly showed his opportunism when he shot a grand goal. He took a loose ball, raced right through on his own, and drove low and hard to the left corner of the net. Although Waterford retaliated with a Kerwin point, Kerry still led at the interval.
That lead stood at the minimum. Kerry 2-4, Waterford 1-6.
On resumption, Kerry with the breeze began to move more smoothly and had points from Dan McAuliffe, Mick O'Dwyer and Dave Geaney. The Kerry defence was shown up in practically bad light 8 minutes after the restart when Waterford scored their second goal, beautifully executed though it was. Tom Doc Walsh put Justin Spratt away on the right wing. He worked his way goalwards, then crossed to Jimmy Hewitt, one of 2 forwards unmarked out from the Kerry goals, and the Waterford man crashed to the net. This proved to be Waterford's last score, however. Kerry gradually began to exert supremacy, and points by Tom Long 2, Mick O'Connell 3, Paddy Sheehy 4, Dave Geaney 1, Dan McAuliffe 1, well and truly put paid to Waterford.
The result was Kerry 2-18, Waterford 2-6, a final score that most certainly hid the true story of the encounter.
Kerry were held for fully 40 minutes by a hardy Waterford side. That winning margin of 12 points looks convincing enough, but don't be fooled by it. Let's face it, Kerry have not the look of prospective All-Ireland champions. Certainly not yet, at any rate. There are a few obvious weaknesses, and changes are essential for the big test at Cork on July the 15th. Waterford hit hard and Kerry faltered. Cork will hit harder, so beware, Kerry, and prepare well. For the most part, it was scrappy fare. That the defence conceded 2-6, a sizeable tally, is poor reflection on it again. Each of the six forwards scored, but there is plenty of room for improvement here. Tom Long, although he scored 1-2, is definitely not suited to full forward. Seamus Murphy was not a success on the 40. Mick O'Connell had a rough time of it at midfield. He was bustled around a lot hereabouts and did not really get going until the last quarter. But then he showed his true worth with some impeccable fielding and kicking.
The jury was out on O'Connell's partner and the other new boys.
Jimmy Lucy, one of the four newcomers on the team, certainly had a successful championship debut. But I wonder, is he the ideal partner for O'Connell? No doubt about it, but the Carrick man is a great trier and a hard hitter. But he wastes a lot of energy unnecessarily in trying to play too much of the field. What of the other three newcomers? Left half forward, goal scorer Roach had a reasonably good game. Sean Sheehy had a disappointing hour, although a fine run by him down the right wing in the first half led to Kerry's first goal by Tom Long. Noel Lucy will almost certainly be retained on the strength of his display at centre half back.
Cork were to provide the monster final opposition. The contribution of Mick O'Connell was seen as vital to the outcome.
O'Connell's brilliancy should sway the scales for Kerry at midfield. The Cork backs will outweigh the Kerry forwards and we may expect close marking. In fact, that will be Cork's trump card. Kerry are the most finished players, but close hard tackling could well put them off their game. And should this policy prove successful, a home victory would be a certainty.
The idea of switching midfield General O'Connell to the forwards was put out there.
Attack has been the weak sector of Kerry teams for the past few seasons. At Listowel, another weakness was disclosed, and that was in defence. With a few exceptions, the brothers Lucy, Paul Sheehy and O'Connell. The form of the regular Kerry players was below par. Taking the Listowel game at its face value, it would appear the Kerry selectors have a few problems on hands. I have an idea that O'Connell would serve the side better on the 40 than midfield. He is too accurate to place him in a position which is often defensive and where straight shooting is not required. Tom Long might suit midfield with Lucy. The material, though not properly tried out yet, seems to be available. The trouble is to find out the places to which each man is best suited.
There were two changes to the Kerry team for the Munster final. Donie O'Sullivan was introduced at right corner back, coming in for Alan Conway. Jean Driscoll was brought in at centre forward. His fellow West Kerry man Seamus Murphy was moved to half back. Sean Sheehy went in the opposite direction. Seamus Roach was omitted. Donie O'Sullivan feels the Kerry squad at that time had a nice blend of youth and experience.
For all of us who were young that time playing, you had the nucleus, a very strong, experienced nucleus from, say, Johnny Culty in goals, Niall Sheehy, Tim Lyons, Seamus Murphy, Mick O'Dwyer, Tom Long and Mick O'Connell, half a team in themselves. Dan McAuliffe was playing also that time, so that was a strong nucleus of good, very excellent experienced players.
Kerry supporters need not have worried, as the game turned into a rout for the Kingdom. They were 11 points to the good at half-time and 16 clear come full-time. The early exchanges were decisive.
In the opening quarter of an hour, Kerry were in complete control, and it was during this period they laid the foundation for victory. Though McCarthy opened Cork scoring with a point within 2 minutes, McAuliffe goaled for Kerry 3 minutes later. A misunderstanding between Breen and Toomey led McAuliffe from Long's pass through for Kerry's opening goal. When Long seconds after again raised the green flag, the game looked as good as over. Points by P. Sheehy, Driscoll, Long and McAuliffe give the Kerrymen a commanding lead. When Driscoll punched a Paul Sheehy free to the net, the game became one-sided. Though Barrett had a point for Cork, Kerry held a comfortable lead at half-time by 3-4 to 2 points. Noel Lucy Kerry and Joe Sullivan Cork were sent to the sideline. In the last few minutes, O'Connell burst through a cluster of opponents and shot an angle ball clean to the net. Just before the whistle, he repeated the performance, this time with a point, to leave Kerry easy winners. Kerry's front row was much too elusive for the Cork fulls. Overall, the Cork team gave a most disappointing display. The worst I have seen from wearers of the red jersey in years. A section of the crowd became unruly and missiles were thrown at Johnny Culity.
A final score of Kerry 4-8, Cork 4 points meant the Kingdom had secured their fifth Munster crown in a row. Donie O'Sullivan, whose outing against Cork was his first championship action of the season, remembers the game well.
I think anybody that played that day wouldn't forget it, because it was a fairly tumultuous game. And there had been a lot of, I think there had been a very niggling league game in February. I wasn't there at the time, I was available that time, and I wasn't at the game, but a few of the Kerry players got injured. So there was a build-up of that, and it was a very tough, rugged Munster final.
With Cork brushed aside, the Kingdom were focusing on facing Dublin for a place in the All-Ireland final. Kerry captain of 1955, John Dowling, who also played when the Kingdom beat Dublin in 1959, was asked for his views on the Dublin encounter by the Kerry man. Dowling felt that following the shock defeat of Down, any of the four semi-finalists would fancy their chances. Dowling tipped Kerry to win, but believed the absence of Noel Lucy, suspended after his sending off in the Munster final, could harm Kerry's chances. Timmy O'Sullivan, Gerry O'Riordan and Gary McMahon were all called on for their first appearances of the campaign. O'Sullivan was called upon at centre-forward, replacing Gene Driscoll. The introductions of O'Riordan and McMahon, also up front, caused positional changes. Sean Sheehy reverted to half-back, Dan McAuliffe went from corner to half-forward, Noel Lucy and Dave Ganey were the men to make way.
Donie Sullivan, as right full-back, making his Croke Park debut, was allotted the job of marking Heffernan. Sean Sheehy, another newcomer, was trying his hand at half-back in bug-time football. The utility man of the team, Seamus Murphy, was placed at centre-half. A big ordeal, after all. We had been told about Des Foley on the Dublin 40.
Fortunately, Lucy's absence did not impact too much on the Kingdom, for it was at the other end of the pitch where the damage was done.
Kerry had a free, Paul Sheehy grabbed the ball and passed to Long, who crashed into the Dublin net in the fifth minute. Dublin made headway from the kick-out and Timmins was fouled. Delaney pointed the free. In a Kerry movement up the middle, P. Sheehy rushed out and passed to O'Sullivan to drive over the bar. Long ran out near the corner and got possession from a lengthy O'Connell punt. Long's shot from a difficult angle sailed between the uprights. O'Leary led a Dublin breakaway and a fast shot by Burgess hit the Kerry crossbar. Long ran out to field a high ball. He was fouled and O'Connell pointed the free. Kerry continued to dominate and Flynn in the Dublin net saved a rasper from Paul Sheehy. O'Leary soloed to the attack and pointed. O'Connell sent Kerry attacking. Long swept outfield and grabbed the ball. High near an upright it sailed and a point score was allowed after consultation between referee and umpires. O'Connell burst through and a grand left pegged punt went just above the crossbar. McAuliffe was fouled. The free landed well in and Long drew on a ground ball for another white flag. From long range, Paul Sheehy added a point. McMahon quickly had another. Kerry had a free near the corner. O'Riordan centred this. Long secured, passed to Sheehy, who gave to McMahon. A lightning shot passed Flynn to the net, and Kerry were a dozen points up after 25 minutes play. O'Connell took a sideline kick about 40 yards out. There was a wild Kerry roar, and the ball swerved beautifully between the uprights. Dublin had the ball in the Kerry net, but the whistle had previously gone for a 14 yards free, which Delaney sent over the bar.
The game was over as a contest by half-time. The score was Kerry 2-9, Dublin 3 points. The second period was a mere case of going through the motions.
Dublin attacked strongly and had a free. Delaney pointed. Joyce pointed in the 6th minute. O'Leary finished a great solo run with a point. Burgess followed quickly with another. O'Leary broke away to add a point. Kerry's half-time lead of 12 points had now been whittled down to 7. After Paul Sheehy widened an angle free, Dublin were nearly through when Sean Sheehy saved for a 50. This was placed well in and the Kerry goal had a marvellous escape when a Burgess shot hit the crossbar. Over 20 minutes of the half had elapsed without Kerry raising a flag. The blank spell was broken by O'Connell. From a sideline ball he placed with deadly accuracy between the uprights to rouse the southern following to frenzied cheering. Paul Sheehy seconds later tacked on another. And then Dave Ganey did likewise. 3 points inside a minute. Timmins put a free over the bar to leave the final score. Kerry 2-12, Dublin 10 points.
Despite Dublin's second half attempts, Kerry were never in danger.
Greatly overrated, Dublin were crushed. The winning margin at the finish is a true index of the superiority of the men from the Kingdom. The game came as a big disappointment to neutral spectators. As in 1955 and 1959, the ballyhoo which preceded the game, lauding Dublin's greatness to the high heavens, was completely misleading. The football prowess of the City men was very much overrated. Dublin started preparing for the tilt with Kerry as early as last November. Indoor gymnasium work was carried out during the winter months. Then, when the weather got fine, outdoor practice was the order. Kerry's last line of defence completely mastered the Dublin attack. On the wing, O'Dwyer held his end up. I have yet to see the brilliantly consistent Waterville man beaten. Kerry had the edge for three quarters of the hour at midfield. The pre-match publicity was pinpointed on O'Connell. Temperamental, off days, up and down form were amongst the criticisms. O'Connell's 2 points from the sideline will long be remembered. A superb display of sheer scientific football. Jim Lucy was good. He and O'Connell are not yet midfield twins. Each plays his own game, but understanding will come with time. The section of the Kerry team which amazed everyone was the front row, which could be regarded as experimental. Each of the three outplayed his opponent. Long's display, especially in the first half, had much to do in the rout of the fancied Dublin team. A special word of praise is also due to the trainer, Dr. Eamon O'Sullivan, on having the players so surprisingly fit in such a short time.
The greatest day. The story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group. Proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams. Part 2.
1962 saw the first live television coverage of games by the national broadcaster. Kerry's win over Dublin drew an estimated viewership of 100,000, which was massive at the time. Among the viewers was future Kerry goalkeeper Charlie Nelligan.
Back in 1962, when I was 5 years of age, we didn't have any television in the house, and my father got an invite from a sales rep in Newcastle West that if we'd like to go and see the All-Ireland semi-final between Kerry and Dublin. And I remember sitting down inside in a room upstairs over a pub somewhere and watching the match. That was my first recollection of seeing Kerry play.
Roscommon, who had earlier in the year beaten Kerry by 14 points in Killarney, were to be the All-Ireland final opponents. Roscommon had accounted for Cavan in the last four by 1-8 to 1-6. Roscommon's big problem will be to hold the Kerry midfield, according to Paddy Foley in the Kerryman. PF added that Roscommon caused one of the greatest shocks of the season by beating Galway in the Western Decider. A man who went under the name Green and Gold, a Kerryman writing from Castlereagh, Roscommon, wrote in the Kerryman newspaper how Roscommon felt Kerry were overrated. Roscommon, he added, believed Kerry has been made the Goliath by the Penn prophets and that Roscommon themselves are the David who shall lay them low. The sole change in personnel by Kerry for the final saw Noel Lucy return and Donny O'Sullivan miss out. Seamus Murphy took O'Sullivan's number two jersey, with Lucy coming in at centre-back. The reason behind O'Sullivan's absence would be viewed as remarkable these days. However, it just goes to show the vastly different times we now live in.
I was in Maynooth that time, the seminary, and you just didn't get out to play games. You were allowed to play during the holiday time, and that was it. It was, but you see, I suppose you had to face it. The rules were there, and we knew it beforehand. It had happened to John Kennedy with Galway in 59. He was really a marvellous player, and he wasn't allowed out, and Galway lost. At least Kerry won in 62, but that was it. And of course, disappointing. Watched it, and then with being young as was, and seeing all the rest in Croke Park playing and winning, it was, or being whatever about winning, being there and so forth.
While Donny O'Sullivan was an enforced absentee for that final, Seamus McGarrett was a surprise addition to the Kerry panel. The minor final took place as a curtain raiser to the senior decider. After starring in goals for the minors in their victory, McGarrett was then asked to hang around just in case.
It's a funny one. The first All-Ireland I ever went to was 1962, and I was playing myself in the minor. And I was playing in goal. Dr. Jim Brosnan was our trainer, and he had warned me. He knew that I had never been in Croke Park before. And he said, whatever you do, he said, don't look around until the match is over. Because I suppose he was afraid that I'd spill a goal in the meantime. So I can always say that I actually played in Croke Park before I saw it. And as it turned out, that year I came out then as a sub. I was a sub goalie with the senior team that year. Johnny Colletti was in goal, but there was no fear he got injured. No, there was no medal for sub goalie at that time. If I got one, I suppose I would have a record that would be very hard to beat, because I'd have won the two medals on the one day. And I won a minor medal again the following year in 1963, which would have been probably unusual. Minors and seniors, we trained together an odd night. But that time you had only 20 of a panel on the senior team. So they didn't carry a sub goalie as such. But the fact that I was with the minors, they kept me as a sub goalie with the seniors. Yeah, just in case.
Inside a minute of the final, Kerry gold and they never looked back afterwards.
And Sean O'Shea leading the Kerry team, and Rishi were almost ready for the throw-in of 1962.
Yes, indeed, Gary, the news looking about this, you have Sean O'Shea captaining the Kerry team, trying to emulate his father, John Joe, and his two brothers are playing with him, Hardy and Nile, an unusual occurrence.
The ball is driven in long here now, first of all, to the Kerry defence. And they're under a little bit of pressure trying to get the ball out here now. Peck's tough part again. Ball cleared up along. Bit of a fumble there by the Roscommon man. Jim Lucy's won this ball. Weesh, it's a free in.
Yeah, Jim Lucy, his brother Noel also, of course, an outstanding footballer. The last tackle behind him, Tim Tiger lines up.
There's danger here, and it's gone into the back of the net after 36 seconds or so. Gary McMahon, Weesh, is after getting a goal for Kerry.
A goal for Kerry after 35, 36 seconds. An amazing start for Kerry. Mick O'Connell floated the free in. Gary McMahon was waiting for the ball. It came out, hopped in front of him, and with his right hand, he just flicked the ball into the back of the net. That's the fastest goal we've ever seen in an All-Ireland final by the Listowel Emmys man. 35 seconds, Gary.
Kerry fans everywhere may have been celebrating this strike. However, historian Owen Curry says team trainer Dr. Eamon O'Sullivan would not have been so appreciative of that Gary McMahon goal.
His book in 1958 says, man stays in his position, you don't move. He gave out when Gary McMahon scores the goal against Roscommon at the 1962 All-Ireland football final. Everybody in Kerry celebrated except Eamon, because he said, that wasn't your corner. It was the other corner forward should have scored that goal. He was a man, he believed you stayed in your zone and kicked out of that zone and you stayed within that zone.
Former Supreme Justice Hugh O'Flaherty feels the timing of McMahon's goal will never be equaled.
Gary McMahon's goal cannot be beaten in time, because in those days, before the ball was turned in, the backs on each side went back, but the forwards did not go forward. So the forwards in each side and the two midfielders on each side lined up at the centre of the field for the throw-in. The ball would be thrown in. Now it was the duty of the corner forwards to hear it in as quickly as they could to their positions. But nonetheless, the point is they were not in the positions from the start. They had to rush into the position. So therefore, Gary's goal cannot be overtaken.
Kerry supporter Tom Hurley, he believes McMahon's goal was planned, with McMahon paying heed to some pre-match advice.
And it was kind of a, you know, it was a rough and tumble final, because Roscommon played that kind of football. Before the game, one of the Kerry selectors said to Gary McMahon that the Galway corner, or the Roscommon corner back, he had a tendency to go for everything, you know, like. And in the first second of the game, the high ball came in, and the corner back went out full-blooded for it, and Gary McMahon waited behind him. And in 30 seconds, the ball was in the net for the fastest goal ever scored in a final, scored by Gary McMahon, a man who was also dead and has written more songs, like his father before him, about Kerry football. And I mean, his songs and his stories will live on forever.
Kerry added a point, but Roscommon then very nearly scored a goal of their own.
A lovely point by Timmy O'Sullivan there, Castle Island Desmond, and got the ball, saw two dummies, went around his men, popped the ball over the bar, great tap by the Kingdom.
Roscommon back again, the hits are going in by the Kerry defence, the high ball in the middle of the field. Roscommon again now, great shot inside, blocked inside the goal, three or four people have put the bodies on that, Weesh. How did it stay out?
Yeah, that was some great blocking there by the Kerry defence. Now, see him, Johnny Cullity, somehow got their bodies behind the ball. Roscommon were coming forward the way the ball was played out the field. Lucky escape.
Two scores by Mick O'Connell had Kerry in the driving seat.
Kerry on the attack, Tom Long drives it inside. And it's going to be a free in. Mick O'Connell to take this. I think Richie will pop this one.
He didn't get it. Tom Long, the West Kerry man, got the ball. He was pulled and he was dragged. Free in, St. Moore's, the referee from Wicklow. And Mick O'Connell, the man from Malinchay, and popped the ball over the bar.
Well, Kerry defence are very mean this afternoon. They're giving away nothing so far. This ball is cleared in again to midfield. And it's another wide for Roscommon. This Kerry defence certainly doing very well. Good ball is going in. They're winning it so far. It's cleared out towards the middle of the field of Roscommon. They're attacking now once again. Great block again to Kerry half-back line and the full-back line. Playing very well. They're trying to work this one up now again. Once again, it's got in front of the Hogan stand. Kerry attacking again. And Tom Long is causing trouble to reach his foot forward.
Long is dead, ducks and legs with a Roscommon defence there. Mick O'Connell pops that ball over the bar, and behind the defence there, Tim Tiger Lines and Seamus Murphy are playing outstandingly well, as is Mick Dwyer.
Timmy O'Sullivan and Mick O'Connell tagged on further points. It left Kerry leading by 1 goal and 5 points to no score just 18 minutes into the final. Roscommon then finally got on the board.
Nahan is pulled down here, Wishy. It's a penalty. Penalty to Roscommon.
Yeah, that's a definite penalty, Gary.
And it's a goal. It hit the back stanchion. And it's the relief for Roscommon.
Kerry responded immediately. Mick O'Connell doing the necessary after a foul on Dan McAuliffe. O'Connell was also involved in Kerry's next score.
Now Mick O'Connell tries this one. Tom Long again gets away from a heavy challenge, and another point for Tom Long.
Yeah, that was a lovely point here. The ball came across from Mick O'Connell. Long got the ball, turned around there, put the pass in Timmy Sullivan then. The Kerry supporters are getting excited about this. Popped the ball over the bar. Lovely point by the West Kerry men.
Tom Long is causing problems inside here. Kerry defence under a little bit of pressure now, trying to clear this one out. Roscommon putting on the pressure again with the Kerry half back line in particular. Mick O'Dwyer going high for this one. That's a great catch.
All great for the feeling by O'Dwyer there. What a wonderful football of the Waterman is. The ball came down 3 or 4. Roscommon went up. They looked like they'd get it, but O'Dwyer went up higher than all of them and brought it down.
And Mick O'Connell free extended Kerry's advantage before Roscommon had the final say of the half. A point.
The greatest day. The story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group, proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams. Part 3.
A 7-point margin in favour of Kerry was the difference at half-time, 1-8 to 1-1. Roscommon outscored Kerry in the second period, but the Kingdom always maintained superiority. Kerry had the first say of the half.
Well, the second half is just underway here. Straight away now, it's Roscommon into the attack, and they have tried to get something out of this one, but the Kerry defence so far has been outstanding. It's 1962 final, and it's a kick out once again by Johnny Colletti. Gathered in midfield, Mick O'Connell clears it inside. Mick Dwyer trying to get on the end of this, and Roscommon. Timmy O'Sullivan has this ball. Timmy O'Sullivan, it's played outside here. That's Dan McAuliffe back again. Tom Long drives it inside. Good work by Gary McMahon, and it's got inside to the far forward position. High ball. Paddy Sheehy punched that one. It's back to Paddy Sheehy for the second time. It's back to Paddy Sheehy for a third time. Eventually he's got it over the back.
Oh, great point by Paddy Sheehy, and it was Gary McMahon and Tom Long who were involved in that. The ball came back to Sheehy. Sheehy hit the post of the ball, got it again, turned around, sold two dummies, popped the ball over the bar at the railway in. Paddy Sheehy, lovely point. He's trying to lead his brother to victory today. His brother Sean Oak is the captain.
Don Feely pointed from a free for Roscommon. Mick O'Connell did likewise for Kerry after Tom Long had been pulled down when on the attack. Kerry's advantage now stood at 8, 1-10 to 1-2. Just 4 minutes into the half. The next point, arguably the score of the match, belonged to Mick O'Connell.
Well, so far it's been outstanding stuff here by Kerry. It's a packed crowd in Croke Park, look on it. There's another kick inside. Another pie for the Roscommon. It's Kerry with possession again. Mick O'Connell fall there in the middle of the field. And he's going to take this free again himself, Weezy, and pops it over the back.
Oh, lovely point by the Valencia Maestro. He got the ball himself, turned around, see, he did it beautifully near, turned around, he was pulled and he was dragged, threw the ball down in the ground and just popped it over the back. Lovely point by O'Connell.
Roscommon attack once again. Kerry defence very mean again here this afternoon. Roscommon are attacking. There's three Kerry players around him. The Kerry full back line, we see outstanding so far.
Oh, they're playing outstanding. Seamus Murphy in particular has been wonderfully there. Tiger Lyons and I see the Kerry full back line. They're playing absolutely outstanding. And Mick Dwyer is having a great game at wing back.
Now it's a great catch inside here. The ball inside to the Kerry full forward line. Timmy O'Sullivan trying to get the ball back. Here's a chance now again. Timmy O'Sullivan has it. Timmy takes the kick and he's just missed it. Left and wide.
Yeah, but a good chance. What a lovely play of Timmy O'Sullivan in Castle Island, Desmond. I mean, he had this unusual style of just getting the ball and bringing it around the man. And wonderful effort by him there, but just drifted wide of the post.
Two Roscommon scores brought a little more respectability to the scoreline. Paul Sheehy provided Kerry's final point of the decider.
And Tom Long with a shot half blocked. Chases it again. Still, Paddy Sheehy is there to help him, and that looks to be a great score for
by Paddy Sheedy. He's in tremendous form today, and it was Tom Long who made it. Tom Long got the ball last week and chipped it out to Sheedy. She turned around, and with that lovely small little jinking style, he has popped the ball over the bar with the right leg at the railway end. Lovely point by Sheedy.
Kerry only put over 4 points in that second period, but it was more than enough as they ran out winners 112 to 16.
Roscommon outclassed from start to finish. It was apparent early on that, realising the superiority of their opponents as ball players, Roscommon had decided on a spoiling policy. While this failed in its objective, it certainly spoiled the game from the point of view of the spectators. Whenever Long threatened danger, he was fouled.
Donny O'Sullivan has a degree of sympathy for Roscommon.
You don't blame Roscommon. Again, they were trying to slow down a bit and all the rest, and they didn't have all the luck either, because apart from conceding the early goal, Jerry O'Malley got injured. I had to go off as well. He was a centre back, and Jerry was a good age, a fabulous player, a footballer and a hurler. A man who never won an All-Ireland medal. He won a junior hurling All-Ireland medal, and he played for years and years and years. But that was it. That was his final. He was captain, and they lost and he got injured.
Many thought before the game that Tony White would prove too hot a handful for the young Kerry captain Sean O'Sheehy. But this was very far from being the case. In the first minute of the match, Jim Lucy made an extraordinary mistake. He fielded a loose ball and gave an almighty kick in the direction of his own post, which nearly led to trouble, but danger was averted.
That Lucy mishap is among the earliest football memories of Kerry legend Mikey Sheehy.
I wouldn't remember a lot about it, but I do have a recollection. I think it was the late Gary McMahon scored a goal. I think he punched the ball into the net, you know, and I think Gary, it was one thing that he was very apt at doing, was fisting the ball to the net. But there was another thing with Jimmy Lucy. He was playing midfield with Kerry. And I think in those days that most of the players went to the middle of the field for the throwing. Uh-huh. And, Jimmy won the ball anyway, but actually he kicked it the wrong way. He was that nervous, I'd say, the poor guy. But I can remember those specifics. But I was only 8, but they were special memories, you know.
Future Kerry goalkeeper Charlie Nelligan earlier told how the 62 semi-final victory over Dublin was his first memory of Kerry football. Nelligan also remembers seeing the Sam Maguire in the wake of that year's success.
Kerry won that final in 62, and I remember being down in school in the convent with the nuns and Timmy O'Sullivan and... Who was Moss Tehan was there, I'll be good with the both of them now. They came in with the cup, and it's just, I was only 5 years of age, but I can still remember it, you know.
While Kerry fans and the majority of the players would be planning for a triumphant homecoming, not so for Seamus McGarrald. The sub-keeper of 62 had to head back west to resume his studies.
In 62, I didn't come home then, I think. I had to go straight back to school. I was boarding in St. Mary's in Galway. And I remember Dr. Jim driving me to the train Monday morning and giving me £2, which was a lot of money that time. So I think I had 15 shillings to myself for the school term, which could buy lots of things that time.
The Kerry man summed up the feelings of the fans.
Few gave Kerry a chance of winning at the start of the season. It was a proud occasion for old followers to see Sean Ogue, John Joe's son, holding up the Sam Maguire in triumph.
Sean Ogue had his brothers Paddy and Niall on the team also.
Men of the kingdom have always been famous. In Dublin or Galway or Cork by the Lee. But the best one to cherish or sing of their praises. Our own darling Colleen, the Rose of Partnersilla, from Ebra, no Dangan, no Cower, Sybeen, Bishi Moira, no Anya, no Eileen, no Sheila. We're proud to our hearts of the Rose of Kerry. She will tell you. Trophies won for her. cry to the heart of the Rose of Kerry. She will ofttimes relate to a team that was mighty, Joe Barrett and Sheehy MacGarrick from Snee. O'Sullivan, Conbrosnan, Paul Russell and Whitty. Sure we've never had better, said the Rose of Kerry. Then with tears in her eyes she will praise Dick Fitzgerald, the darling footballer ever was seen. Austin Stack and Tom Ash, brave martyrs for Ireland, whose memory shall live said the Rose of Kerry.
The Rose of Kerry, sung by Áine Cronin, was recorded in Jimmy O'Brien's Killarney in 2006.
You've been listening to The Greatest Day, a 36-part series documenting the story of Kerry's All-Ireland Senior Football Championship victories. The Greatest Day was presented by John Drummy, written by Joe O'Mahony, and researched and produced by the Radio Kerry Sports team. This programme was made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland Sound and Vision Scheme.
Next week on The Greatest Day.
Jackie Lyon's appointment as manager in 68 was seen as vital to the county's progression.
Johnny Cullity retired, Mick O'Connell had retired, Sean Murphy had retired, and Mick Dwyer had retired.
That win ensured a Munster final with Cork, a match which was put back 1 week due to Kerry's trip to America.
New York had a very good team that him. They had some Kerry, very good Kerry fellas with him, actually.
What I remember is that of being very apprehensive about the result beforehand, in that we had played Cork in the National League in probably March or April of that year.
The game with Mayo was one Kerry should have won by a bucket load, considering the amount of chances they had.
Because I committed the foul, Shelly Cullity roared, "Don't let him in!"
Crowley causing problems at midfield, selling the dummy, pretend to go right, going left, and left for an effort by Dintro Crowley all the way over the bar.
It was an atrocious day, there were very high winds, there was very low scoring in the game.
And Evans with the kick, and Johnny Cullity wishing with a brilliant save.
Wind that save from Kerry on his winning way.